Wednesday, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. That's the toll-free. When you call in, press 1. We'll cue you into the show. And please tell all of your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio. Click follow on the show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. And thank you, 88,000 listeners, for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. Also available on iTunes. And I also want to mention that our radio programming, our educational programs, are being brought to you right now by Auspex Pharmaceuticals. They have given us a very generous educational grant, and we thank them up front for all of their dedication to our HD community and family members, and Help for HD Radio and Help for HD International. So tonight, our incredible special guest is the one and only, none other than famous and super powerful, Kristen Powers. She is the creator of Twitch, the documentary about her journey with Huntington's disease. And she talks about the possibility that she has inherited the same fate as her mom, and about the struggle whether or not to test. So we're going to talk to her tonight. Kristen is a junior at Stanford University, and she created her first documentary called Twitch following her genetic testing for Huntington's disease. And she hopes that the film will spark international conversations about genetic testing and the implications of making the choice to test, as well as remove stigma surrounding the neurological disease. She raised $45,000 using crowdfunding platforms to fund the creation of this film, and is currently recruiting or circuiting the film on a global tour. She's just come back from Barcelona. We're going to talk to her in a second. And she's also appeared in major news outlets like USA Today, and she previously spoke at TEDx Teen. I'm going to be posting some links for you all to check out. She's just an amazing young woman. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the show, Kristen. Welcome to your show. How is school going? You're in school right now.
Thanks for having me. School is good. It's only the second week, so it's not too hard just yet, but it's good to be back.
Good. Now, you're just returning from Barcelona. Tell us a little bit about that. What happened there?
Sure. I was in Barcelona for the European Huntington's Disease Network as a member of the Youth or Young Adult Working Group. So I was there representing the United States, and it was a several-day conference to discuss the latest research and issues. We had a work day for the YAWG, as it's called, the Young Adult Working Group, to discuss issues most pertinent to the young community in the HD world. So that was awesome. I also was there to give a speech, and I was able to screen my documentary while I was there as well. So it was a really good time.
Fantastic. How many people were at the conference there?
I believe the numbers they reported were around 900 people.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. And were you able to screen each day or just the one day? Did you?
I just had the way they did the documentaries is they had four films that were being shown, and two were shown on the first night, and two were shown on the second night. So it was on the second night, and then they had a panel hosted by Charles Stabine, the former NBC News correspondent, where we all talked about our own respective films.
Good. Now, you have your schedule up on your Facebook page, and it looks like October, you're going to be in Iowa City. November, it looks like South Carolina. Is that true?
So if anyone is interested in seeing a full screening schedule on twitchdocumentary.com, there's a tab called See the Film. And so over the next few weeks, I'm going to Iowa tomorrow, San Diego next week. Then the following week, I'm doing a Dallas-San Diego combination. I'm not screening there, but I will be giving the keynote at the Huntington Study Group conference in Minneapolis in November. And then I'll be showing in South Carolina in November as well.
Fantastic. And then December, you're heading to South Africa?
Early January, but yes. I'm going to study abroad for 3 months in Cape Town, South Africa.
Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. And that's through your through Stanford?
It's through Stanford, yes.
Okay. So you've kind of been taking some time away from school, which that's got to be hard to juggle, right?
Yeah, I think it should be okay this quarter. I'm taking a lighter load than normal because I took a heavier one last year, so I'm able to afford to do that a little bit. So luckily, I'm 2 years into the Stanford experience, so I'm a little more well-versed on what commitments are like. So it should be a good balance.
And so what is your major?
I'm a communication major with a minor in Spanish.
Very good. Well, let's talk about Twitch, and let's talk about what is your history with Huntington's, and what brought you to put this documentary together?
I was 9 years old when my mom was first diagnosed with Huntington's disease, and that's the first time that we actually knew or had heard of the word Huntington's, because we didn't know much about her father, and so it turns out he was the one that passed on the gene to her. And so it was kind of a surprise when we learned about it. I actually was 11 when I first found out about it, 2 years after my mom's diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And it was also around that time that I knew of my genetic risk as well for inheriting the disease. So my adolescence was a lot of learning what HD was, what it meant for my mom and my family, and then what it meant for my brothers and myself growing up in terms of the risk factor. Mm-hmm. And for the film, I'd always been really fascinated by the power of film. I was a huge environmental junkie and activist in high school and middle school as well. And so I was really intrigued by documentaries like The Inconvenient Truth and Food, Inc. and how you could both be entertained and educated at the same time. I knew I always wanted to make a film about Huntington's because it's something that's difficult to explain in words or on paper, and it's really hard unless you see it, but it's not always possible for a large audience to be exposed to someone with HD. So this was my idea to show it using film, but at that time, this was probably when I was 15 or 16, I didn't really have the know-how for making the film, but that came about when I was 17, when I was lucky enough to meet a group of people at a conference that helped me formalize and, I guess, finalize my plans for making this film. And that's when I realized I wanted to make it about my own personal genetic testing journey.
So let's talk about the testing journey. Now, I did watch your TEDx teens presentation. That was fantastic. I'm going to be posting these links during the show while we're talking, and I'll also post them on the show page, and after the show I'll put it up on Facebook. But and also, folks, you can go to her Facebook page called Twitch. What's it called? Twitch?
TwitchDocumentary.com.
There you go.
And, you can go there, and then that's easier because I think Facebook and Twitter are also on there. But both are Twitch Doc, like Facebook.com/TwitchDoc, or Twitter is @TwitchDoc, and then Instagram is @TwitchDoc as well.
Oh, very good. You've got it all organized very well. Have you had some help in all this coordination of information? Is this through your school, or did your dad help or mom help? Or
My parents are pretty offhand with the project. They usually only help when I ask them to, and usually that's advice or logistical things, which they're great at. But for the past 3 years, I've definitely been the primary person running everything and organizing it, but I have had a lot of informal help. And then in terms of actually making the film, I did have a film crew and an editor and a producer that helped me through it, but they were they weren't 100% committed to the film at once. Like, they had other full-time jobs and other commitments as well. So I've primarily been the only one that stuck with it for all 3 years.
Mm-hmm. You've done a fabulous job, I have to tell you. So impressive at your young age that you've accomplished all of this. But anyway, I was listening to your TEDx presentation, and you know, you're talking about how do you decide to test? Like, what is your philosophy? Can you describe your philosophy? Because it was really smart, I thought.
For me, I knew I wanted to get tested because the burden of knowing or not knowing had become greater than what I perceived the burden of knowing to be. So I was going about senior year, every day just thinking about my at-risk status and what would I do if I had HD, if I didn't. And it was really overwhelming. So for me, I realized at that point that even if it were bad news, knowing my genetic status would be better for me because then my mind wouldn't be consumed by this division of potential life paths, which was really overwhelming for me. So that was when I was very sure that this was a good time for me to test. And so I think that other people have that as well when they realize that they're constantly battling with this question mark over their head. And so that's the time I think that you realize that, okay, maybe I should look into the testing process.
Okay, so that some people don't want to test, and we, you know, it's totally a personal choice, right? But what if you do want to test and you can't find somebody that will test you because you're not symptomatic? How do you handle that? Did you have that problem at all?
No. So you have the right to test after you turn 18. So you should be able to find a reputable genetic testing center either through the Huntington's Disease Society's Centers of Excellence or through connections to your local physician. And so for the most part, I mean, I didn't have any problems at all. I called my local hospital. I looked up genetic testing and found the contact at my local hospital to go through with the genetic testing, and they paired me with a genetic counselor. So there's a lot of resources that can pair you with the right person to help you undergo genetic testing. I think there's like a lot you need to learn about the process because it is quite intensive, not only emotionally, but potentially financially, especially if you decide to do anonymous testing where you're not revealing your status, especially to insurance companies. And then also time investment-wise, you have to make several appointments and then several visits to the hospital. And so I think the problem is not so much finding someone who will help you go through genetic testing, but it's just making the time investment and all the entire investment in general just to go through the process.
So what is the cost for testing?
It varies from center to center. So you can have it covered by insurance. That's not what my family and I decided to do. We decided to do it without insurance. And it was about, in North Carolina where I lived, it was about $1,000 for the blood draw, the genetic counselor's time, the psychiatrist's time, and the neurologist's time, as well as like administrative costs and things like that. So it's about $1,000, and that's not including any transportation or time off work in terms of money loss. Like, I know that's important for some families to take into consideration because you might have to drive further, spend gas on visiting these areas or these clinics, and then time off of work is also important to consider in the cost as well.
Mm-hmm. How much time of counseling do you need to focus on?
So that's really dependent on the individual. The genetic counselor will often meet with you to determine a baseline of how much you know about the genetic testing process, and then you can go from there. For me, the genetic counselor and I had talked on the phone previously, and she knew I was fairly knowledgeable about Huntington's disease, and she felt like if I wanted to go through more genetic counseling, I could, but at that point, we both understood it to be a good time to go forward with genetic counseling. I know some people who meet with a genetic counselor for a year, over the course of a year. Others meet maybe once or twice in a month. So it's really just dependent upon what the individual wants or needs.
That's good. And is that included in the testing, or is that aside from the testing?
The testing,
the cost,
the actual, the cost. So Yes, the more appointments you have, the more it would cost. I also, at the time, was seeing a psychiatrist outside of that, so that was another reason I didn't feel like I needed counseling, because I knew everything I needed to know about HD and the testing process, and then for personal help, I had an outside person who was doing a good enough job for me in that front.
I bet you educated that person quite a bit too, right?
I've been in counseling since I was 7. So
I'm sure you've you've educated some people along the way too, right?
Yeah, and so so I didn't need as much genetic counseling as other people, but that's a conversation to have with a genetic counselor, maybe over a phone consultation, to determine the best path for you before going through a psychological evaluation, neurological evaluation, and then the blood draw.
Now, in your travels, have you found the resources vary within the locations? Like, for example, you're going to new countries now. You've gone to Spain. How were the resources there? Did you find out by talking to anyone?
I don't know for Spain specifically. I do know in certain European countries it's very, so to speak, primitive in terms of what they can offer, and that's just because of a lack of infrastructure. Maybe their healthcare system isn't as developed, but I know there's still a lot of issues with accessing just basic care for HD patients, let alone genetic testing, and understanding the implications of such. So it really does differ from country to country, extremely so, I think, from my experiences. And then in terms of the U.S., I think the experience is rather uniform, but the problem is just how the geographic accessibility to the genetic counselor or the genetic counseling clinic or center.
It'll be interesting when you go to South Africa. Are you going to be looking into the Huntington's field at all while you're away in South Africa?
So I'm planning on screening with the local Cape Town support group there, so I will be meeting local people affected by the disease, and then I'm already in communication with a researcher in the area, and then potentially on a Johannesburg as well, but we haven't planned it out that far yet.
Wow, that's exciting. Well, tell us, what was it like making the film? Was it a long process, or...?
Yeah, so it's been 3 years in the making. I started, the timeline is, give you an idea, is I started researching when I was 17, started fundraising when I was 18, and that was January 2012. And later that year, I started filming with a local North Carolina film crew, and we finished filming in late 2012, and that included my genetic testing experience. And then the next, from 2000, probably early 2013 to early 2014, it was a year of editing. Mm-hmm. So it was, the filming process was definitely a lot of in-person commitment and mental energy and physical energy for that. And then the editing, I hired an editor to help me with that. So it was a longer process in that she would go into her space and work on it for like a week or two, and then we would meet up, or she would send me the version and we would review it together, or I would send her comments and then we'd start the process over again. So that one wasn't as intense on a day-to-day basis, but it was very intense during the review period, and that was drawn out over a year.
A lot of editing, a lot of time spent looking over the film, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that every filmmaker feels this, but too much time on fundraising. I'm still fundraising now in order to cover distribution costs. So just a constant fundraising game. It was like exhilarating and fun when it started, and you know, now it's getting a little bit tedious, and I burned through my family and friends' wallets, so I like the base of being able to, who I can reach out to, is smaller. My extended family, it was surprising who did donate, because my extended family, like all my family members, contributed what they could, but it was really impressive to see what my high school and college friends committed to the fundraising, which was really awesome.
So you were able to get some grants and things like that as well. I saw, I think it was Ospex and Lundbeck on your website, so that was helpful, right?
Yeah, that was very helpful. They've been very supportive.
Now, can you apply for any other type of grants, like through the Independent Film Association, that kind of thing?
I never received any of them, so... they're very highly, all of them are very, very competitive because all filmmakers need money. I applied to several and never received money from any of them. So it's just been individual donors and then corporate sponsors.
Mm-hmm. That's quite an ordeal getting the funding together.
Yeah.
What's next for Twitch other than you're going to... Iowa and South Carolina and then South Africa. What's going to happen after that? Are you planning on doing any festivals or anything like that?
We're in the process of applying to festivals right now. So it's not our primary method of distribution, but we do hope to get into one or two. Then in the next 6 months or so, we're going to try to figure out a video-on-demand platform where people can access this film through iTunes or Netflix or Hulu or things like that, and then have that available for about a year and maybe opening up DVD sales at that time as well. That's not 100% determined yet. Probably early 2016 is when I'm going to finish this project and let it go off into the internet and let people use it as they wish. For now, it's just figuring out distribution and how to get it to the people who want it. And then the cool quirk of the whole distribution process that was never intended but is looking more possible is it might actually be feasible for us to screen physically on all six of the habitable continents, which is really cool. We've already done three, and then 2015 we'll add Africa, and then I've had a lot of interest from Asia or Australia, and then we tried to get to Asia as well, just so we can say we've been there.
Right. Well, you know, HD is in every country in the world, so potentially you could go to more than 200 countries.
Yeah.
That would be quite a tour.
Yeah, that's more than Hillary Clinton's known for 212 or 112, and that was already taxing enough. So,
oh my. So, are you going to be doing another film, or are you going to kind of let this kind of go for a while?
I think it's probably my one and only film. I was more interested in it from an educational platform than a artistic or film.
Right.
Interest, so it's probably my one and only.
Mhm. And then who knows what you're going to be doing next, right?
Yeah,
including
myself.
My goodness, what a wonderful life you're having. It's good.
Oh,
good
thanks.
For you.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
So tell me what does motivate you to keep going the way you're going? It's amazing what you're doing.
I don't really know. I think my dad always jokes that I've always been a social activist. So I think like social activism is nothing new to me. He would always say like you were gearing to do something from like when you were five. I've always been very passionate about different causes that are close to my heart. And just in terms of motivation, I don't know. I'm a very, very type A, and inefficiency bothers me, and I am very much a problem solver, and if I see a problem that I have a solution to, I'm always very tempted to implement it, and which isn't always great for a balanced schedule, but I'm getting better at it. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm I never use the term for myself, but everyone's like, yeah, you're a workaholic. Whereas it's like one of those things where I enjoy filling my free time with work that I'm passionate about. And so I guess that's why I don't use the term workaholic, because I don't consider it work, because it's enjoyable and fun to me.
Right.
But I guess
it
the rest of the world would consider
going, right?
it as work. Yeah, so like work is the stuff that I don't want to do. And most of the time, that's how we want to define work, and I feel like I don't have much work.
Well, one of the items that you gave me in the email was what I hope to accomplish. Now, that's kind of a loaded question, because, you know, we have the documentary, then we have what's next after that. So what do you hope to accomplish with the documentary first?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's talk about what you are looking to accomplish in your life.
Okay. So with the film, the reason I made it was to start conversations around Huntington's disease. I'm a huge biology nerd, and so I always found it really interesting that this is a relatively simple genetic disease. And so in terms of a research perspective, theoretically it would be one of the easier ones to cure, because we know what causes it, we know where it starts, we know a lot of the characteristics of the disease, which is far more than other neurological disorders that we're working on. So it was really fascinating to me that, you know, this disease could potentially be a snowball cure for other diseases as well, yet nobody knows about it. So that's what, at least from a biological perspective, I was like, this in terms of engaging scientists and researchers, that's what I wanted my film to do as well. But also just in terms of, I talk a lot about sparking conversations, which is, again, I'm a type A person, and it's really hard for me to do a project without metrics and having aspects that are measurable. But I think I've had enough experience with HD to know that some of the greatest impact you can have is not measurable. And what I mean by that is, for example, I was talking to one of the people featured in my film, and she comes from a family where this disease is very stigmatized, and this was a big step for her, because this was the first time she had publicly talked about the disease, and she had emailed me and saying her family, which all of them were, you know, personally touched by Huntington's disease. This wasn't like a stranger, a family that was any strangers by any means to the disease. She said that through the film, she was able for the first time ever to have conversations with her family about the disease.
Wonderful.
Yeah, which, like, you know, that alone is, like, you know, feels like enough validation to have spent all the past 3 years making it. But those, in terms of HD, I think those conversations are important to have, especially in the U.S., in terms of mental health illness, and just talking about why we make the snap judgments we do about people with disease, why we abandon people with disease, why we don't feel compelled maybe to stay and care for them, or, like, what does it mean to come from a disease family, and what does it mean to be a disease advocate and a disease research advocate, and figure out, kind of talk about those things. And then for the audience that's maybe not so much interested in Huntington's disease, I'm interested in engaging them with genetic testing at Stanford. Mm-hmm. In the Silicon Valley Bay Area, everyone very much wants to know. Information is power, and I found a lot of people were very much like, oh, yeah, I would want to know, you know, because information is power. I mean, Google is headquartered here. You know, Google is the ultimate, like, information at your fingertips business. And I wanted to have a film that I'm not a proponent one way or another for genetic testing necessarily. I just want people to understand that it's not as simple as it sounds. And also, I think it's a huge ethical debate waiting to happen that we haven't really broken the ice on. So I'm just interested in getting people think about genetic testing, and even if they're not at risk for HD, what would they want to know what they are at risk for, because we're all at risk for something. And is there any benefit in knowing, and if so, what protections or measures need to be put in place before you find that information out?
Mm-hmm. So what
a lot
about
of conversations.
Very good. Do you have any idea or opinion about, I'm curious to know, about the IVF PGD procedures that they do now?
Yeah, so Just like with genetic testing, I don't think you can really tell anybody whether or not they should have a family or not with if they're at risk for Huntington's disease. But what I do compel everyone who's at risk for the disease to do is to find out all of their options regarding mm-hmm. reproduction that for an individual at risk for HD. Because, I mean, theoretically, you know, just the way, purely through a genetic explanation, this disease wouldn't exist if people at risk for the disease or people who have the gene didn't have children, right? Like, no, mm-hmm. you know, that's, I mean, it's a, in a perfect theoretical world, that's how things would work in terms of curing the disease. But that's not the world we live in, and it's not necessarily fair.
and you can't tell people not to have children.
Yeah, there's just, like, right. a lot of hot water that you're getting into
yep,
there.
Yep.
But what I do strongly encourage is for people to educate themselves. So, you know, I think there's, through the pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, that's huge in the last year for ways to have children without passing on the gene through the, for people who don't know what that is, it's just taking embryos and testing the embryos before, just in like a petri dish for the presence of the gene and they only implant the ones without the gene back into the mother's womb. So she will only have children that D negative. They do not have the gene. It's because they've been tested beforehand. There's also a lot of other options. The more controversial more and a little more outdated, I think, in just the sense that we now have PIDD, is the ability to test once you are pregnant. And again, that brings up tough issues like abortion. Like, would you mm-hmm. terminate the baby if you found out you have it? But, I mean, again, important option to know that, you know, you can test once mm-hmm. you're pregnant. Like, that's another thing to consider. So you can test while pregnant for the gene. You can test whether an embryo has it before you even have a child. I think adoption gets overlooked a lot.
Me too.
But I do think, so this is one of the things as a child who grew up in an HD family, it's just the consideration of whether or not you are, as an individual, like whether or not it's fair to bring a child into the world. And again, mm-hmm. if you, after deliberation, think that it is, like all the more power to you. I'm just happy that you thought about it, you know. Like,
mm-hmm.
But for me, when I was going through the genetic testing process, I didn't want to, if I had tested positive, I would have been sterilized and not had children. And that was because not so much the fear of passing it on. Even if I did have children through PIDD, I just felt like I actually couldn't even go through that process because I just didn't want to bring a child into the world or into my world with a mom who has the disease. And, you know, and you never know who you're going to marry. And so, like, maybe you'll have a great spouse that will be there for your kids. But, I mean, as a young person talking to other young people, there are too many stories where that
right.
parent disappears or that parent leaves the child with the symptomatic parent. And, you know, it's just, like, a lot. Like, do you think, like, you will be in a situation when you're symptomatic where you can provide a good, secure, safe place for your child it's people are like, that's not fair that I have to think about that, and it's definitely not, but I mean, that's the situation, that's the card you've been dealt and everyone has something like that, something that's not fair, like you have a risk for a heart disease so you have to eat differently, you know, like it's a lot of there's a lot of those pros and cons. So I think it's really hard to think about those things, but it's necessary because it's you're putting another generation at risk if you don't.
Right. Well, and that brings us back around to the film, to your documentary. It's really all about awareness and education and teaching people because, you know, if people are willing to look and watch and learn, then it's going to be a great success. Unfortunately, some people don't want to look and watch and learn. So, you know, you just have to put it out there and the ones that are meant to see it and be changed by it will, you know, and it's
mm-hmm.
out there and it will do its job on its own. Although you're the one that's put all the work into it, but it's a fabulous thing that you've done. And I'm sure that your dad and your stepmom are so proud of you and I just am so impressed with the level of compassion and you know, your drive is just incredible. So I hope that you continue to advocate and educate for Huntington's. I think you will, from what I can hear. And I guess I wanted to ask you, if somebody wanted to pursue this type of a project, what would you advise them?
So for any project, you always have to do your research beforehand. And whether you want to make a film or do a Huntington's disease awareness walk or a fundraiser or something like that, it always helps to talk to people who have done it before. I wouldn't have been able to make this film if I hadn't reached out to filmmakers or producers that had an entire career of this. And they gave me a tangible workload that I could chip away at to make sure that this was feasible. Also, sometimes it helps, I often feel this at this point in my life, relief when I find out other people are doing it. You don't want to reinvent the wheel in nonprofit work because there's too few resources to go around already. So when you're doing your research, see if there's other people in your area that are doing something similar, or see if there's someone else that has similar ideas, because you could either join them and, you know, being the first follower is sometimes just as important as being the leader. Or you could maybe band together and make this event even stronger just from the fact that you found a partner in crime to work with. So definitely research is like huge in terms of what will it take to make this? Do I have the time available to invest in this project? Do I see myself needing to raise money? Like, what is required of me and maybe my community? And sometimes you may not have all the answers to the questions, but if you feel confident that you can figure that out along the way, I would, you know, you can pursue it. I mean, you learn a lot from failing, and oftentimes your definition of failure is not the definition of other people. Like, if only my teacher had seen this film, like, I might have considered this a failure, but to her, that means a lot. So there's different definitions of success. So sometimes you just have to put yourself out there. And even though the research is overwhelming, sometimes you just have to, like, blindly go through it. I think anyone who has had a successful business will say.
We definitely learn from our failures, don't we?
Yeah, for sure. And anyone who started a business, a successful business, will often tell you they had no idea what they were doing. Or at least had no idea what they're getting themselves into. But you either sink or swim. And if you sink, then, like you said, you learn from it and then make things better next time.
Well, you definitely have a very wise soul. You are very wise for your young age. Is there anything that we left out that you wanted to mention?
A lot of people ask me how they can see the film, and so I just want to reiterate, you can see right now we're only doing screenings, so the screening schedule is available at twitch.tv/the-film. You can see the tab, but if you just go to twitch.tv, that's easier. And if you want to bring the film to your area and do it, maybe that event, that first awareness event you do is a Twitch screening, you can find my contact information on the website as well.
Okay.
And reach out to me, and we can try our best to figure out how to get the screening to your area.
Yeah, I think Katie and I want to see if we can get it up at UC Davis for sure. Have you been to UCLA yet?
I have not. I mean, I can come. California is much easier for me while I'm in school.
I'm actually going to be talking to some folks at UCLA soon, and I'll definitely bring it up to them for you. And the more the better. And time is running out for you for this year, somewhat. So now, once you go down to South Africa, you're going to be there for 3 months, said? And then you'll be back here again?
Yes.
Okay. So at least we'll get you back here after 3 months.
Yeah.
Well, excellent information. And I can't wait to see it. Hopefully we can get it either up at UC Davis or UCLA. I'm smack dab in the middle of California. I don't know. I would love to have you come and view it here. I just don't know how I would do it. So maybe we can talk about that off show. But let me talk about upcoming events and some announcements, and then we'll close the show unless you had something else you wanted to let us know about. You're welcome to come back on the show at any time and talk about your adventures.
Well, one thing I do have to say, just because I work for them, is just that if anyone needs more information on Huntington's disease or is really interested in the science of Huntington's, I work for the Huntington's Outreach Project for Education at Stanford, which is HOPES for short. So you can check out hopes.stanford.edu, and you can learn as much as you want on anything relating to HD. The website's been around for 14 years, so we have a lot of material on there. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, so you can engage with us in a lot of ways and learn about HD in a variety of in manners. And we have a few exciting videos and such coming out in the next few weeks, so we're excited for this year.
And you go to conferences. We got to have you at our symposium in July, which was awesome, and I got to meet you.
Yeah. So HOPES does a lot of fun trips, and we like to see the HD, visit and help the HD community as often as we can. So we do a lot of local California events as well.
Thank you so much. Okay, upcoming events, October 25 to 28. Help for HD International will be attending the IACP in Orlando, Florida, to present information about Huntington's disease to about 14,000 attendees at the 21st Annual International Association of Chiefs of Police. It's a conference and law enforcement education technology exposition. We're looking for volunteers in Florida that might like to go with help spread the good news about Huntington's education. We need to educate our law enforcement, all law enforcement agencies and legal avenues such as EMTs and, emergency rooms need to know about us. And we just need so much education. And then November 6 to 8 is the HSG 8th Annual Symposium at the Hyatt Regency in Minneapolis. You can go to hsglimited.org and register there. They also have a family day, which is great. Kristen, you're going to be there too, right?
Yeah, I'll be speaking there. So I'll be I'll see any of you all in Minneapolis.
That's wonderful. And then December 3rd through 5th is the World Stem Cell Summit at the Marriott River Center in San Antonio, Texas. Go to worldstemcellsummit.com, register there. That's a huge one as well. Now, in 2015, June 6th, we are going to be holding the first Help for JHD Kids Walk at McKinley Park. Katie Jackson, our VP, is going to be organizing that, and that's at McKinley Park in Sacramento. I know it's a little premature to be talking about June of 2015, but hey, we need to organize. So go to helpforjhd.org for the details of the walk. And we're trying to raise research dollars for UC Davis. Dr. Jan Nolte has begun her JHD research initiative at the Institute for Regenerative Cures, and we are supporting that 100%. So also, if you have any events that you'd like me to announce, and send me the email, information at melissa@helpforhd.org. Upcoming shows, October 7, Ask Dr. Goodman show will be back on, Dr. LaVon Goodman. We're going to be talking about GI issues in HD. Then October 14, Dr. Van Kamen and Dr. Lorna Speed. Dr. Van Kamen is retired CHDI, and then Lorna Speed's been on the show a couple times now with her book, Clinical Trials. October 21st, Teva Pharmaceuticals will be on. October 28, we're going to have a special Halloween show. And November 11, HDSA's Louise Vetter will be back on. She's going to give us some updates. And Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Keep us informed on how you're doing. And
yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
We'll conclude the show. Oh, you're welcome. I'm just so impressed with everything that you're doing. We'll be watching you.
Thank you,
everyone, for tuning in. And come back and listen to the on-demand episodes, 187 episodes now on iTunes, too. Don't forget to tell all your family, friends, and colleagues about Help for HD Radio. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, or the website, helpforhd.org. Everybody have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week. Kristen, thank you. Talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.